Hi, it's Mark Stenson. I'm happy to share with you this bonus episode of Unlocking Your World of Creativity. Our guest is Evans Baya. He's the co-author of The Innovator's Advantage. I was really happy to have Evans write the afterword to my book, A World of Creativity, that I published earlier this year with G. Mark Phillips.
Unlocking Your World of Creativity with Mark Stenson.
A little bit about Evans. He writes in the afterword that he is an innovation thought leader and always finds creativity one of the most important and captivating subjects. Because we cannot innovate without raw materials, ideas which are birthed through creativity. He says that the golden nugget of this whole series of creative interviews is the recognition of the individual and the creative self, and that creativity manifests itself in so many different ways. The best of art, painting, photography. It's not just the best because it looks visually stunning, but because it also tells a story. Evans writes, "Creativity is everywhere. One of the most refreshing aspects of nature is that nature tells a story. Every time you go for a hike or observe animals, especially in the wild, you see a story. In fact, you cannot be around nature for very long before you create a story in your mind for what it means to you." Well, the same is true in our lives and professions. Evan says there is creativity in every subject: natural sciences, social sciences, engineering, law, business, every type of job, and of course, every part of the world. Evans finds creativity in sports, entertainment, music, and all forms of human interaction. And the interview that I'm sharing as this bonus episode was conducted from another podcast with my co-host Kirsten Gouldy for IntelliKey Leadership Stories. So I'm pleased to share this bonus interview with you. As Evans says, we live in a world of creativity. Enjoy. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Mark Stenson. My guest is Evans Baya. Evans, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic.
Evans is a strategist, an innovation consultant, a commercialization advisor. His clients are in the areas of healthcare, food, technology, entertainment, universities, nonprofits, and the list goes on. And he's got a great book called The Innovator's Advantage. We're going to talk to Evans about that. Evans and I met in this kind of innovation chemistry setting. We were going to do some, call it a focus group, call it an advisory board on what we could do with technology. Evans, tell us about the background that you have. I mean, you're a PhD in engineering, but then you've got this, I'll call it the softer side, you know, where you really like to interact with people a lot. How do those things come together in your day-to-day practice, wherever you'd like to take us?
That's great, Mark. So, Mark, my story is a long one, but I'll give you the short version. So I'm sure your listeners are going, oh, that guy has an accent. Where does that accent come from, right? And I always tell them, hey, from somewhere in Idaho. No, I live in Idaho. I love my state. I appreciate this amazing place we call home. It's been my home for most of my adult life, actually. So I just love the place. But my accent has stayed with me as I travel around the world. And so as far as my background, I came to the United States to go to school. And I'm a chemist. So the whole idea of customer chemistry naturally just, oh my goodness, yeah, what are we making? Which molecule? There is a whole chemistry mindset in how to build great customers and great relationship with customers. We talk about that in innovation. And so I did chemistry and then did engineering, business. And then eventually, as I was leading a group of scientists in Silicon Valley, I found myself, most of people who are reporting to me are PhDs. So I thought, you know what? Maybe a good idea for me to get one. Actually, it was not out of competitiveness that I got a PhD. Actually, it was because I am highly driven in terms of education. So multiple postgraduate degrees. And that was all driven because I really wanted to learn. When I did my PhD, actually, I did something that was really difficult, which was I went in to two different universities, two different departments, business and engineering, and I tried to put faculties together to work together so that they can support me in my work. It was not easy, but we eventually did it. By the way, how I ended up doing is, working out is I had advisors in five different continents when I finished my PhD in smart grid and technology, intersection of technology, power, and IT. So anyway, so I'm a geek at heart. I'm a chemist at heart. But during that process, you know, I was very technically driven. But I realized very quickly, I would never, my education, my technical skills don't get me the results. Good understanding and working with people gets me the results and gets me even much more than results, gets me satisfaction. It feeds me. It feeds them. And that was the turning point for my leadership journey.
I love the difference from success to satisfaction.
Yes.
You know, because we all want that inner, like, hey, that was great. We did a good job, yes, but that felt good.
Yes.
You know, and I think a lot of people do miss that.
Absolutely. I cannot tell you. I remember the first time I got a patent, my very first patent. I mean, come on, man. When you get a patent, you're an inventor for life, right? And life is amazing, right? You make your first, you know, six-figure or whatever, bonus, things like that. It's great. But it's actually great for maybe until you sleep at night.
Yes.
The next morning you wake up, you're going, nobody cares about your patent yesterday. Nobody cares about your bonus yesterday. Who did you influence and how are you going to excite somebody today so that you can go farther faster?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and Evans, in your process, the innovator's advantage, you know, and in your book of the same title and the workshops that go with that and the content that goes with that, you've been doing it for several years now. Are you seeing the kind of shift where it's not just we're driving to the same end result, but we also want to build a team and build relationships and build customer satisfaction along the way too?
The answer is yes, yes, and yes. If I can add an extra yes. But the point, and this is the reason, when we talk about innovation, we always forget this. Innovation is creation of new value. And we ask two very diametrically opposed questions. Innovation for who? And by who? If you ask those two questions, they actually lead you to the same place, by people for people. So if you actually miss connecting the people element, you may have the greatest idea, you may have the best concept, you may even have the financial resources. The market is right, but you don't involve the right people, the right place, you fail. This is one of the reasons, technically, you look at all studies, innovation initiatives globally, most of them fail. We are looking at maybe 5 to 8% success rate.
Most of the others
fail. So we always, that's the question we have to ask ourselves. Why? I mean, there are more books about innovation now than ever before, and they all seem to fail. Right? Everybody is trying to fix the failure, and we give all these technical perspectives on how to do this better, lean, all these different elements, which I all love, by the way. But we found in our research that nobody is addressing that question I just asked, for who and by who. So this is what we found.
This is great. And do you find the culture of different companies? They said, we want to build a creative culture. We want to build an innovation culture. Are they adding this people piece?
No. Initially, everybody wants to focus on the new ideas. And by the way, we have this guy over there who is really smart. He's the one who is supposed to be doing it. What we found was, let me tell you, that smart guy over there, he only addresses one of the six stages. So he may do a really good job on that one stage, and then that's it. So guess what? Your innovation is not going anywhere. So one of the areas we spend a lot of time with leaders, especially in the initial stages of our process, is really helping them understand this very simple yet very powerful concept, which is this. 73% of your success is determined by the people element. Even if you get the others right, the last time nobody wants 27% success.
Right. How do you train them? Somebody who may not have these natural people skills, can they be instilled? Can they be trained? And how do you do it?
The answer is yes and no, mainly yes. Let me tell you why. The number one thing that when I spend time with leaders, and we're going to talk about conscious leadership within a second, is, you know what? Let's actually understand who you are. Let's start there. And my goal is not to change you. I used to have not a very academic term, but it was a socially, the leaders got it when I used to say it. I always used to tell them, I want to identify where you suck and help you suck less. Right? Let's look at what are those areas that you are killing innovation, people skills. Let's look at those. And then from there, let's actually identify how to fill those gaps. You may actually invest to fill those gaps, or we may create a system to help you fill those gaps. Mm-hmm. And what I find is most of the leaders, as soon as they get that aha moment, most of them are willing to say, show me the 3-4 things I need to do over the next year to get better. And most conscientious leaders are willing to invest. There are some who will say, you know what? I'm here for capital. I'm here just so that I can sell the company. And then those are not the kind of leaders we want to work with anyways. My turning point happened over like 3-step process. And my very first step was a discussion I had with one of my professors in Harvard Business School, and he was saying, what motivates you as an engineer, as a scientist, to want to get into business? Why are you thinking about doing, so I was doing business strategy and intellectual property, and I'm thinking, yeah, because that's what my job is. It's all about innovation. So, you know, it's all about how to take ideas and create great innovation and create a right strategy to create greater value to it. I am highly resource-driven, in terms of resourcefulness-driven. So I want to get return investment for everything. And I had this moment of, oh, maybe it's not just about dollars and cents. There is a bigger purpose to me. And that started the journey of, what is that bigger purpose? Then I noted, when I go and spend time with my team, I loved this. I love discussions. I love to get deep and do whiteboards. I mean, I have whiteboards everywhere. I mean, I use my fridge as my whiteboard. I mean, napkins.
This is why I love to hang out with Evan. we can go through a stack of napkins like nobody's business.
Believe it or not, before that journey began, a lot of people thought I was an introvert. My technical and academic journey had trained me to actually consciously just live in this box. And all of a sudden, I started realizing there's something greater. And that led me to different ways of managing the team. So I found my team is willing to talk to me more. They don't feel intimidated by me as much. They don't feel like I am just driving for results. We still want results. But there is this human element that says, you are much more complex, much better than just you doing set of experiments. And that aha moment changed. And when we started getting into consulting, we started looking into, I did not actually look at it as the specific issue, as the people side. But the more we started looking at our customers, who are those customers that are successful versus those who are not successful? We found out the people intelligence part was always higher for those more successful clients than those who are not. And that was like the last aha moment. Actually, that led us to writing the Innovator's Advantage book, because we had a customer, real quick story, a real customer with a huge opportunity. We're talking about almost $10 million, at least recurring revenue every year without almost doing nothing. And we came to them and gave them this idea. And we said, here are the customers. I actually went and talked to the customers, his initial customers. But this guy did not care about his team. All he cared about is, when can I get my dollars? And by the way, that innovation ended up not doing very well. That opportunity ended up melting away. And I remember that really pained me, because it was not personal with him. But for him, the people intelligence part was not there. And since then, he has been working on it. But that determines who are successful, who are not successful as leaders, but also as innovators.
Our guest is Evans Bhaiya. He's an innovation strategist, and as you can see, a passionate thinker. His book is The Innovator's Advantage, and you can reach more information about Evans at theinnovatorsadvantage.com. Mm-hmm. Let's turn the page now to this idea of not just leadership, but adding the conscious part and more higher purpose that we've been talking about.
You know, Mark, this is one of those areas that the more I dig, the deeper I go, the more I realize there is more. But let's start with high level. A few years ago, I was thinking about what does conscious leadership mean to me? So I needed to create a definition. So my definition is not very technical, but it's important to me, which is this. Conscious leadership is understanding how you influence people and how others influence you. And when you have that conscious right in front of you, then you are able to say, am I positively or negatively impacting other people? Am I positively or negatively impacting myself? Because we talk about great leaders have three things in common. Number one is they are clear thinkers. They lead themselves and they lead others.
So good.
So with those three things, conscious leadership does those three things for me and for those I work with. And out of that, then we identify the skills, the intelligence, the emotional aspect of things that allow me to live consciously, knowing that I am, every time I talk, every time I work with people, I'm emitting specific energies that are positive or negative. I'm influencing them. And I want my life and my interaction to be a positive one. I want it to be one that allows them to grow. And we have identified what I call the four forces of influence, and I'll talk about that within a second. And those allow us to do the right thing at the right time, but consciously and conscientiously.
Yeah. I love that. And it crosses borders too. I mean, you opened with your very personal story about coming to the US, but now giving back, you know, yes, and going back to Kenya and helping people there, helping small businesses, helping nonprofits. Your group Expansion International, tell me how that came about and what you're working on with that.
Yeah, so Expansion International, for those who would like to find more information about it, is expansioninternational.org, is a nonprofit organization that we started that helps transform communities. The key word there is transform. And so we started our very first trip. I took a trip of my friends from Boise, Idaho, four of them in 2002. And I told them, hey guys, you wanna know where I grew up? Come on, let's go see. And but we wanted to check around and see how we can help. And we visited schools, we visited churches, we visited hospitals, we visited with all kinds of leaders. And after we came back, we said, we want to focus on healthcare. We want to focus on children's education and other areas. But we started there. And since 2003, we have always sent teams of medical practitioners, missionaries. I mean, we have kind of all kind of people who go there and do some great work. We have seven different communities. And since then, we have been able to do some amazing work, Mark. We actually moved what we would call a refugee camp, and we helped build homes for them. It's a thriving community. It's an amazing story. You can find that on our website. This last year, we just opened our second medical clinic. We started with the first one in 2007, which now treats about 2,000 people. This other one is even bigger, and we have traveling nurses and medical practitioners. And so there's a lot going on in all these seven different communities. The idea is when we meet that child who has no chance of going to high school and we invest in him or her, that could be Evans, by the way. If I can be able to invest in that person most of the times comes from a family that will never afford education. The most likely, most of the other siblings will never go anywhere in terms of education.
Yes.
When you give that person a chance, what that means is you're not only educating them, but you're giving their family an opportunity to wealth and an opportunity for future education and you're giving an opportunity for them to get out of poverty in the future.
That's so good. And I got to think that you're putting this through the filter of how am I impacting them, and yes, how is that impacting me?
Absolutely. You know,
at that soulful level. I mean, this is obviously a faith-based group. It means a lot to you. You know, it's a heartfelt, heart-inspired action. If you're willing, what does that mean to you?
Two things real quick. Let me first talk about how you impact others. So we have an average of, I do believe the last time we checked this back in 2018, every time we send an American group there, which we do, we try to do at least twice a year, if not three times a year, we are looking at interactions with up to 17 to 20,000 people.
That's a big ripple.
Oh yeah. A lot of impact, yeah? But what I hear is, I can go to the communities and they would tell me, this person came and saved my life, literally. I cannot tell you how many people who have actually been brought in on a stretcher to our clinics. I cannot tell you even how many kids have been birthed in our clinics. Oh, this lady was going to travel 20 kilometers or whatever it is to go deliver a child. But they just, on a public transportation, they just had a baby. And, oh, there's a medical camp going on over there. Let's take them over there, whatever it is. And now one of our clinics, we even have a 24-hour maternity clinic area because people do not always have access to where to go deliver babies. And so I can go to the communities and I can hear all those great stories. But one of the greatest reward for me is when I come back to our home, this beautiful Boise, Idaho, and I hear the stories that these exercises, these opportunities are having on our local community. Mm-hmm. People who went thinking they are going to go help and go change the world, and the world changes them. And they come back more passionate, more just. So they understand what we are fighting with on a social context, and they want to be better people, and they want to continue to promote betterment of the humankind. And they have witnessed the work of their own hands. They are not being told. They have witnessed the work of their own hands and how that has come back to bless and actually overwhelm them. So that is amazing part of the story. But for me, Mark, I don't know whatever ever stop. The more I go see, it gives me life to keep going. I have a purpose. I have a mission to be a leader that really makes every day count for them.
And you know what? I guess bookending the idea that if you reach out to help someone else, look at the impact it has to you.
Yes.
And so reach across the fence, reach across the barrier, reach across your neighbor's yard, you know, whatever it is. And listen, that's a big impact.
Yes. I've been actually spending quite a bit of time futuristic thinking. And one of the great exercises that I do is with my leaders, especially, is what we say, creating a beautiful future. And it's not, oh, the future you want. That's not what you want. Right. It's the future that needs to be. And so the future that needs to be, and then from there, then what is your place in that future? What is powerful is when I'm talking about the future that needs to be, we are using our intuition. We are using our sixth and seventh spiritual gifts, if you will. We are using, in some cases, we're using data. But I'm telling you, most of the data is retroactive and reactive. And so it may just help us see the next couple of years, but not really the future we are talking about. And so when I think about this, I think of it at a macro level and micro level. So let me give you a couple of things that I think will be happening in the future at the macro level. Number one is, The future cries out for the change of priorities. Humanness is a critical part of the future. That doesn't mean we are against commercial value. That's not the point. But the value of human life, the value of our contribution to the world, I think we are going to get a new generation that says, it's not about justice and equality. That is not the point. That is the expected. What better can we do and be as humans? And out of that construct, we are going to see different business models, economic models, and actually different priorities from individuals to nations. And you're going to even see some impact on that at places like United Nations. The humanness side is going to be a big one at a macro level. This is the thing, is that we have already seen globalization, the impact of globalization, right? And so we try to globalize, and we globalized for the wrong reasons. And I think we are going through a reset the next 10, 15 years, where now we almost everybody's retracting, but now we will reconstruct this again with even more humane way of interacting as a global, at a global level. And with that in mind, technology will be the new medium of that. It's already a medium, but it's going to even play a greater role. Therefore, the humanness side, the connectedness side, the way we do business is going to be different the next 10, 15 years. And of course, how we innovate is going to be different. What we are talking about, the impact of that at micro level is, if you're a business leader today, or a religious leader, or a social leader, what should you be working on? What kind of generation should we be raising that is ready for the next 10, 15, 25 years so that they can thrive, they can be more human, they can actually be happier, right? Less stressful. Every generation has its own challenges. But let me tell you, we cannot be dealing with the same challenges 25 years from now that we have been dealing with the last 25 years. They will have different challenges because of the context, but life and fulfillment will be different then. And what should we be focusing on? And those are the micro priorities that we should be looking at, both socially, economically, and even, of course, that eventually spills over to our political system and things like that.
So strong, and I think it's so practical. And you talk about what kind of kids are we raising, you know, for the next 10 or 15 years, it seems so futuristic. And I'm reminded when my oldest child, you know, was the class of 2002, and I thought, 2002? We're never going to get there. Now I have a grandson who is the class of 2030. And so it is the future. And I look at him and I go, oh, 2030, we're never going to make it. Oh, yeah, we're going to make it. You know,
absolutely.
And I love this idea of not just creating the future, but what are you going to be? What are you going to do in that future? And so, of course, we could continue this conversation all day, Evans, and we would love to have you back to talk more. You know, listeners, this is one of those episodes where it is very actionable. You know, go back and listen to some of the things that you've heard, not just to be inspired, which I am right now. I'm feeling really good and high, but to say, what are some of these action steps? I mean, you know, access Evans at theinnovatorsadvantage.com. Find his book, read that, but also take a look at this organization doing some great work in Africa and in Kenya specifically. It's expansioninternational.org. Our guest has been Evans Baya. Evans, thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Great being with you.
Unlocking your world of creativity with Mark Stinson. Copyright 2020.
Join me again next time with more on how to tap into your most original thinking, get inspiration from experts' own experiences, and gain specific tools, exercises, and formulas to help organize your ideas. And most of all, learn to make the connections and create the opportunities to get your creative work out into the world.